It was an unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys of Kentucky through the Cumberland Gap.
Welcome to this edition of Old Kentucky Tales, the only podcast that solemnly swears that none of its participants have ever listed the job mustard maker on a resume. Today's title is Henry Clay Wasn't Down with TPP. I am your host, Brent Taylor, Assistant Professor of History at West Kentucky Community and Technical College. And with me is the man who frequently complains that Alanis Morissette ruined public speaking when one of her songs suggested that you could do anything with one hand in your pocket. He is an associate professor of communication at WKCTC, Jason Donner.
Well, people are sometimes curious when they're giving speeches, what do I do? What do I do with my hands?
Yeah.
Can I talk with my hands? Can I gesture? Should I be still? Just be natural. You know, a little bit of natural movement's what people want to see.
But what about hands in the pockets?
Well, that would seem awkward after a while. You know, someone always has their hands in their pockets for the entire time.
So a five-minute speech,
yeah, and just you start to think about that. You start to focus in on whatever they're doing that seems unusual.
Right, and that would be unusual, wouldn't it? I think that could be the case. In this episode of Old Kentucky Tales, the main event investigates Henry Clay's America First take on world trade. We will also hear reactions to the show from the Old Kentucky voicemails. And along the way, don't forget to support the fake history sponsors who support Old Kentucky Tales. The products are real, only the sponsorship is fake.
Barrel Barbecue. With a metal wheelbarrow, you're all set to barbecue. Use the grill from your boiler and start cooking. With charcoal, of course. Be sure to check your supply of Coke. And if the chef gets tired, he'll appreciate a quick little lift that Coca-Cola gives.
This is weird. Now, you see the picture over there, right?
Yeah.
So describe this picture for people who don't have the picture.
Well, it would seem like he's pushing a wheelbarrow with some hot dogs and hamburgers on a little grill that you just put in there.
He is.
And I can assume red hot flames and coals. This is like a crazy idea. I mean, I understand the metal part. That actually makes sense. But you don't want to be just moving around, you know, red-hot coals everywhere, things rolling around.
Well, plus, this is a wheelbarrow, right? So what was in there before we cooked the hamburgers? Wasn't it concrete or dirt?
Dirt.
It was something, right?
Yeah.
So I guess you wash it out, and then you're going to cook the hamburgers?
I guess. I mean, he's got a case of, like, 24 Cokes there.
So, yeah, it's a big
party.
He's
not like he's broke or anything, yeah.
Well, that's a great point.
Buy a grill. How about this? A fire on the ground for your hot dogs.
I guess. I don't know.
Put it in your filthy old dirt wheelbarrow.
The only thing I can think of is this is 1956, and you know this generation was the generation that grew up in the Depression. So you're going to multi-purpose on this, right?
Yeah, okay, maybe. Maybe a metal wheelbarrow was somewhat unusual, too. Is that possible?
No, I think they would have been pretty metal, yeah.
Yeah.
They have a wooden handle, probably.
I think they're just overthinking it. But it's kind of neat that, like, Coke was, like, a big deal. You know, that used to be a treat for people.
Oh, Coke was a big deal. Yeah, yeah.
It was new.
This is something on a special occasion and all that. You could get it as a gift, probably, when you're talking about way back then. So, yeah, that's part of it. But this wheelbarrow thing was just really, really bizarre. And you know what else? You know what else is kind of bizarre? We got this call, and I'm telling you, this call is bizarre. Some listener reaction to the show.
Okay.
Thanks for calling Old Kentucky Tales. For English, press 1.
Para español, marque dos ahora.
For old-timely Kentucky talk, dial 3 on your rotary phone right now, y'all.
Your call is important to us. All of our historians, speech critiquers, and producers are currently unavailable. If you know your party's 4-digit extension number, you may dial now. For all other inquiries and comments, stay on the line and leave a message after the tone.
You love food. Me love dessert. Me share old Kentucky mince meat recipe. Yum, 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 yum. 5 pounds beef tongue. 4 pounds suet. 2 pounds raisins. 2 pounds cherry preserves. 1 pound damson preserves. 1 pound peach preserves. 1 pound pear preserves. 1.5 pound ginger preserves. 1.5 pound dried peaches. 1 pound citron. 1 pound currants. 2 nutmegs. 1 tablespoon cinnamon. 5 pounds white sugar. Mix thoroughly with 1 pint sherry wine and 1 pint of good whiskey. Put in glass jars. Yum, 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 yum.
What? What's that? Okay, we're going to have to limit the voicemails on this.
We've got to screen the call somehow, right?
Yeah, it was so cool that that Jabba the Hutt called in.
I thought it was Dikembe Mutombo.
I really, I see you put dessert. That obviously was the Cookie Monster. Are you worried that Jim Henson Company is listening to this? And they're like, don't mention the Cookie Monster.
We mentioned Dessert Monster, right?
Yeah, Dessert Monster. Yeah. That's the generic version.
I think so.
Yeah.
But did you notice in there, I can't imagine eating this because it's kind of like you mixed up every kind of jelly that you had in the refrigerator, yeah, and then you bit into a tongue.
What?
Tongue is one of the ingredients.
Oh, right. Well, we talked about that before. We talked about tongue.
Yeah. And what about suet? Did you see that?
Yeah. What is that? Like grease?
It's going to be grease. It was the fat around the kidney.
Yes.
And supposedly it can be really, really stringy. Uh-huh. So you've got to watch out for that in the recipe.
Right.
Yeah, there's like a special warning about that.
Yeah.
So what?
What's that got to do with cookies, Brent?
it's all that jam, right? So like a sweet thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but eat mince meat at your own risk.
Jabba the Hutt. Jabba the Hutt.
It could have been. It could have been. Maybe. That's a different company. So we might get in trouble with two different companies.
Oh, that's right. That's a different puppet.
Yeah, that could be. I think we probably better move on, and that is to the moment we've all been waiting for.
The main event.
Round one.
We're ready for Henry Clay's defense of the American system.
Now, Henry Clay was from Kentucky, right? That's why we're doing this?
That is exactly right. So he is viewed as the number one all-time legislator in American history.
Hmm.
So that puts him as being really big nationally, not just in Kentucky.
Oh, sure. Yeah, he's a famous guy, but was a congressman from Kentucky, a senator?
He was both of those things.
Oh, okay.
He was also a multiple-time loser of the presidential sweepstakes.
Right. Yeah.
He was also Secretary of State at one point.
Okay.
So he just about did everything except win the presidency. That he had everything else on the resume besides that. And in this particular case, he was defending something called the American system, and he's the face of the American system. So what they were going to do there is have high tariffs, which are taxes on foreign trade, and they're going to use that money then to fund the government, but especially an infrastructure program. So building roads, canals, all that kind
of
stuff.
Meaning that there was none before that?
There was some, but they were going to really do it big, kind of like when Eisenhower did the interstate system.
Right.
We had highways, but they wanted to really build highways.
Yeah, just
that's
some
kind
major
of what was going
investment
on here.
Yeah.
Okay. And some of those canals really needed to be dug if you wanted to interconnect parts of the country. And that's kind of what he saw this as, too, is a way to really bind the social fabric of America together, and you'd have less regional differences and things like that if you could get the places connected.
Well, sure, that makes sense. Yeah, because then you're more likely to travel.
Yeah.
Or to trade that way.
Right, you'll have business dealings with people in other parts of the country, and then together we would be stronger economically as a result.
And you're more invested in other parts of the country in a way.
Yeah, it was. It turned out to be kind of controversial, though, because it really, really worked. The trade revenue, and then the tax revenue that came from that just kept pouring in. And there was actually this big surplus that they had, right. And they found it kind of embarrassing that the government had all this extra money. Huh. This is actually the first and only time in American history that we paid off the national debt. Zero national debt.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe how'd that happen? Were they just selling more goods, overestimated the tax?
The economy really was going strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a huge boom here. There had been a panic back in about 1819. And really since then, they had a really nice run economically. Plus, this was bringing in all kinds of revenue. And there were critics of it who said, well, okay, but we need to get rid of this now. And we want to have free trade. We think that that's going to do even better than this particular program is doing, because this is not free trade. This is the opposite of it. This is an America first kind of trade policy.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, President Trump gave a speech in Kentucky in March of 2017 in which he said, yeah, I want to do things like Henry Clay did them.
Right. Yeah. We hear these same terms, free trade.
Yeah. Yeah. Free trade versus fair trade versus reciprocal trade, all these things. And it was the exact argument that they were having in 1832.
Now, this is the bulk of where their revenue is coming from. This predates any sort of income tax at all.
Yep, that's 100% correct. We do not have the income tax until the 20th century when we get to the Progressive Era. So this is it. This is arguing this would be a major tax reform then is what would be being proposed if you were going to even touch this. That's 100% true. So let's hear from Henry Clay on that. And in the defense of the American system, did you notice we're still a little bit British? It's the defense with a C.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that spelling, right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, just a little British still. But here he says, 8 years ago, it was my painful duty to present to the other House of Congress an unexaggerated picture of the general distress pervading the whole land. We must yet all remember some of its frightful features. We all know that the people were then oppressed and borne down by enormous load of debt, that the value of property was at the lowest point of depression, that ruinous sales and sacrifices were made of real estate, stop laws, relief laws, paper money were adopted to save people from impending destruction, that a deficit in the public revenue existed, which compelled the government to seize upon and divert from its legitimate object, that appropriations to the sinking fund to redeem the national debt, that our commerce and navigation were threatened with complete paralysis. In short, sir, if I were to select any term of 7 years since the adoption of the present Constitution, which exhibited a scene of the most widespread dismay and desolation, it would be exactly that term of 7 years which immediately preceded the establishment of the Tariff of 1824. That's the linchpin of the American system, is to have that tariff.
All right, so I'm going to be a student here for a moment. Raise my hand. What? Just make sense of that. What's he getting at here?
He's saying that the American system is working. You do not want to touch something that's working.
Uh-huh.
You do not want to especially go back to something that really wasn't working as well. He's saying that we want to keep this. We want to keep going forward. And he's saying, now, I have now to perform the most pleasing task of exhibiting an imperfect sketch of the existing state of the unparalleled prosperity of the country. On a general survey, we behold cultivation extended, the arts flourishing, the face of the country improved, our people fully and portably employed, public countenance exhibiting tranquility, contentment, and happiness. And if we descend into particulars, we have the agreeable contemplation of a people out of debt, there's the national debt thing, land raising slowly in value, but in a secure and salutary degree, a ready, though not extravagant, market for all the surplus productions of our industry, innumerable flocks and herds browsing and gambling. That means like frolicking.
Yeah, that's a not in use anymore word.
Uh-uh. No, yeah, exactly.
I think I've seen that word.
No, I had never before this speech either seen that word. On 10,000 hills and plains covered with rich and verdant grasses, our cities expanded, whole villages springing up as it were by enchantment, exports and imports increased and increasing, the rivers of our interior animated by the perpetual thunder and lightning of countless steamboats, the currency sound and abundant, public debt nearly redeemed.
Really paints a picture here, doesn't he? Just like tries to make a mental image for people.
Yeah, because it's a sales job and you want to say how good this really is. And he says, well, do you want to know why things are so good? It's because of the American system. This transformation of the condition of the country from gloom and distress to brightness and prosperity has been mainly the work of American legislation fostering American industry instead of allowing it to be controlled by foreign legislation cherishing foreign industry. And doesn't that sound very 2016, 2017, 2018?
Right. Yeah. Right. Just, of course, I mean, it sounds like the proper idea to favor our own country, but then there's a balance because we're part of the world system, too.
Yeah, except he's not really worried about the balance here. He says that that's kind of working its way out
right.
because we're doing great. So he says, look, they want to change the system. And I'm not so sure about this because there is scarcely an interest, scarcely a vocation in society which is not embraced by the beneficence of this system. Here are the things that are benefiting by this. It extends to almost every mechanic art, to tanners, cordwainers, tailors, cabinet makers, hatters, tinners, brass workers, clockmakers, coachmakers, tallow chandlers, trace makers, rope makers, cork cutters, tobacconists, whip makers, paper makers, umbrella makers, glass blowers, stocking weavers, butter makers, saddle and harness makers, cutlers, brush makers, bookbinders, dairymen, milk farmers, blacksmiths, type founders, musical instrument makers, basket makers, milliners, potters, chocolate makers, floor cloth makers, bonnet makers, hair cloth makers, copper makers, pencil makers, bellows makers, pocketbook makers, card makers, glue makers, mustard makers, lumber sawyers, saw makers, scale beam makers, scythe makers, wood saw makers, and many others.
Everybody back then was just making something, apparently.
Yeah. This is manufacturing. And this particular type of tariff was aimed at producing American manufacturing and producing and making sure that that's good out there in the world.
I think he overdid it a little bit, though, with that list.
19th century oratory.
Rapping. Yeah.
19th century oratory. This was the skill. You had to have this kind of skill in 19th century politics. And to be the best, you had to be the best at it.
You know, some of these are actually really names people use. Tanner, Chandler.
Oh, yeah. Some of those are really old professions, yeah. And they became
Taylor. They became names.
In the Middle Ages, you didn't have a last name. That was only for nobility. Only they were good enough to have a last name.
Yeah.
So a lot of these things became last names later when we're going to have last names.
Yeah. Well, that would have to be a really small village, though. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think maybe you're right.
How many Bobs can there be?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's all you had was that first name. I don't know how they made that work, but that's the way it went. So he also says here that it helps the cotton planter, it helps the tobacco planter, in addition to helping all of these industries. He's really selling this as something that is good for everybody. It's good for the American economy, and it's good for us collectively. He worried about the Union and whether or not the country was going in two different directions, north and south. He made this part of, we want this to be the glue that holds it all together. So then he talks about the critics. And with the critics, he says, look, why would you ever touch this? This is not exactly the way you want it to be. You don't want the rules of the game to change right in the middle because that's really bad for business.
So what happened then?
Well, what happened was they fought and fought and fought over this stuff. There was a point at which they made the tariff really, really high. And they called that the Tariff of Abominations because there were people who didn't like it. The critics gave it that name. And that doesn't sound very good, right? The Tariff of Abominations.
Right. Well, you're trying to label something as the worst that you can possibly label it.
Sure. That's 100% correct. So then there were people who didn't want any tariff at all. And then they had to have a compromise tariff. And that's actually, it's kind of funny about Clay. Clay helped engineer the compromise tariff to get it at a little bit of a lower rate that more people could be happy with. And that's part of how he became the great compromiser.
Right.
between that, then there was a compromise of 1820 and a compromise of 1850. And if you throw that together, that's part of his reputation. But you know what? We got to pay some bills so that we can maintain our reputation.
Okay.
And we're going to do that with the 65 Ford. Only 17 cars, and they're all Fords, offer all these exciting new features for 1965. A new 240 cubic inch Big Six gives you low gas bills, high performance, bigger six-cylinder engine than any competing car. New and bigger trunk, generous room for various sizes and all kinds of luggage as illustrated. Room for four big two-suiters upright.
What?
You can put all your suitcases in there.
Is that a suiter? Is that what they called it back then?
I guess so. I had never heard that.
Two big suiters.
I guess they're going to be cool, right?
Yeah.
I put my two suiters in there.
It does say or, like it's something else.
There is an or, which is dual-facing rear seats in Ford wagons. A Ford exclusive, ideal for families up to 10.
Yeah, but is it ideal for your head snapping off when you have a wreck? Does that mean the kid is facing out the back window?
They are facing each other
or
in the back
sideways?
Of the car. Yeah, they're facing sideways in the back of the
did
car.
Did you ever ride in one of those? I actually can't
in the back of a station wagon?
That.
I did that. We were rolling around. We had toys back there.
Yes.
Cars were rolling around everywhere.
They're sideways facing, and we'd face each other.
Yeah.
But, like, if you had a head-on collision, your head would snap left, and it's over. I remember doing that in
you could have gotten some concussions out of that. Or
for kindergartner, the guy drove around in a station wagon and picked us up.
Yeah.
That's crazy now to have people going sideways or facing back.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, there weren't any seatbelts, so, I mean, you know, way, way, way back.
But there is... You know, laws of nature.
Now, that's true, and I suppose that's where all that stuff came
right.
from.
Yeah, you want to be able to hit something straightforward, not sideways, if you have a wreck. Anyway.
Yeah.
I like this new reversible key. Works
that
no matter which
cool.
side up. I can see how that'd be a problem. You know how you...
Oh, yeah, you put the key in wrong.
Like
I could
that.
Like that for my office.
Yeah.
Can we get one of these for the office? I want you to get a hold of some people down at the college and say, look, we need keys that will go in there either direction so that we don't have to worry about it. That's the last thing we need to worry about is
why
which direction
car keys
the key
like
went
that?
Into.
House keys aren't like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like they wanted
that
convenience.
But that was like a new thing they thought, hey, I know what we'll do.
Yeah. Yeah, they were definitely improving the key at that point. And now we've reached the point that you dread the most, which is the takeaway.
Oh, I don't know, man.
So out of all this Henry Clay stuff, out of tongues floating around in jelly.
Tongues.
What is it?
I don't know. I guess I'll go with the barbecue wheelbarrow.
Yeah,
and
right?
And just try to make something up at the end of this sentence.
That's how you usually
okay?
do it,
That's
right?
what I'm usually doing anyway. Yeah. Why not? You know,
why
any
not barbecue
metal
the wheelbarrow?
Bowl of any sort is going to hold some coals. I like it. And you just roll it around the yard and say, hey, do you want a hot dog or do you want a hamburger?
Special delivery.
Reach in and get it.
Yeah, you could wheel it around the yard, couldn't you? You could go around to the people playing volleyball and whatever.
Yeah. Those things are hard to they're on one wheel.
Yeah, you'd have to be careful not to
so
dump the burgers over,
wobbly.
Right?
Yeah.
I think so. That is an excellent takeaway. That might be your very
That's
best work to date. We have now turned to the final page of this chapter, but never fear, Old Kentucky Tales never fails to return. You can download even more episodes on iTunes or the NPR One app. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or rate us. If you did not like what you heard, you didn't get there anyway here at the end. So, too bad. Special thanks to our producer Todd Birdsong, the Paducah School of Art and Design, and WKMS, and the rest is history.